When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 177. I'm your host, Chris Webster. My co-host, Paul Zimmerman, is gallivanting around Iraq and won't be on this week. Today, I talked to a researcher in archaeology and robotics about how robotics really is the future of archaeology. Let's get to it. All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. Paul is not joining me today because he is still in Iraq as I'm recording this. I think he'll be back next week as I'm recording this, so he'll probably be on the recording 2 weeks from now, so our next episode, hopefully, because we do have another couple interviews coming up, and I'm really excited to talk to him about his research methodologies and how things went in his fieldwork project in Iraq. In the meantime, we have an interview with a gentleman doing research in archaeology and robotics and artificial intelligence and all kinds of stuff, as I mentioned in the introduction. So, and I'm going to butcher your name, even though you just told me again, but Daniel Carvalho, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having on your show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So you are talking to us from Lisbon, Portugal, and you're currently doing a PhD in archaeology and prehistory with the Centro de Arqueologia de Universidad de Lisboa.
Yes.
We'll call it that. So first, let's talk about your background in archaeology. What has led you to where you're at right now, seeking a PhD in archaeology and prehistory?
Okay, thank you very much about the opportunity that you gave me. I love your podcast, so I wanted to be part of it too. My journey to archaeology is a little complex because I wanted to go in the first place to robotics. Mm-hmm. And it all led to the same place, fortunately. And on my PhD, I got the opportunity to make what I wanted to make from the beginning, that it was a robot that could do archaeology. How I got here, it was through theory of archaeology. I began to study how processualism has impacted Portuguese archaeology on my bachelor degree. But then I shifted to another period of time. I wanted to know about cabinets of curiosities and 18th century archaeological thought, if we can say that in that way. And then in my PhD, I thought to myself, okay, now it's the time to do what I really want to do. So I got to robotics and archaeology and fused it with theory to produce a robot that could make archaeological theory.
So that's really interesting, and I'm wondering how you even propose that kind of a PhD to an academic program. So let me flip the question around again. So I asked you how you came to archaeology. Well, how did you come to robotics and all that? Because there's very few archaeology departments out there that are going to have a robotics department at the same time. So you must be working with either some other roboticists or some other robotics departments. But what about your own expertise? Are you looking to build this kind of thing, or are you working with other people to construct something and work with these fields in order to use them in archaeology?
I always work by myself. It was my hobby. Since I remember, I'm doing robots, little robots, things that can move, things that can move other things. My interest now is to elevate them to another plane, the plane of theory and artificial intelligence. So I'm not currently working with roboticists. I'm fortunately working with archaeologists with backgrounds that are similar to robotics, computer science, statistics, But I'm building it on my own. The failures will be only mine. And I think it's interesting to an archaeologist to do the robot, even if I'm not a roboticist, and I'm for sure aren't. It's interesting for me to fail and to invent something. I've always done it in this way. I have done a lot of failures and prototypes, but I think that is the way to create something new. So I'm comfortable with that.
Mm. Did you seek out this program, the program that you're at? I noticed there's a program in Lisbon and a program in Barcelona as well that you're affiliated with. Did you seek these out because of their connections with technology so it would help you do this? Or is this just nearby and convenient and you're able to do what you want to do?
I think both.
Yeah.
Both centers of archaeology give me different ways to produce this kind of work. At Lisbon, I have people that help me a lot with archaeological theory, even if they are not many, because in Portugal we still lack a lot of research on archaeological theory, in my opinion. And in Barcelona, we have a very good school of computer applications to archaeology. So I was fortunate enough to have been accepted in a program where I could study the two ways that I thought were the best to achieve my goal.
Okay. That's awesome. I like that. So let's talk a little about what you're doing right now then. I'm trying to phrase this question in a way that, gets to like what the heart of what you're doing is right now. So you're working on a PhD. You're not probably a byproduct is, yes, we're looking at robots. We'll talk about exactly what form these robots take and what they will do. But yes, you're trying to produce a body of work that produces a robot that, quote, does archaeology. But for your actual PhD, like what kind of question are you trying to answer? Is it, can robots be developed that can do archaeology, or is it something different? I'm just trying to figure out what your actual PhD topic is.
Okay, that is an interesting question, and I have people that ask me that. My main goal and the main question of the PhD is, can robots do archaeology?
But
I'm sincerely thinking that I can, that the answer is yes. So I'm moving from that to, how can robots do archaeology? And fusing them, the answer was to build an actual robot. By other words, only theory could not build this PhD. I had to demonstrate with an actual and physical robot that it could be possible to do archaeology. This is very problematic, because in the first task is to determine what is archaeology, and even human archaeologists are not entirely sure of what it is. But even with a definition, we have to think very deeply on how we work and in what we work and why we work it. And theory of archaeology enters here. So I'm building at the moment a kind of brain that could do basic tasks that we do. This is not entirely new in some fields. We have, for example, automatic typologies. We have potsherd fragments identification. But I wanted to go a step further, and I think this is why I'm able to do the program that I am currently on, is that not only to identify, not only to search, but to analyze by itself, and then produce an argument That is my goal. That is the goal of the brain that I'm building, to produce some kind of theory, maybe not high tier theory. I'm thinking about maybe argument construction, not theories, not very long theories or very complex theories, but maybe logical arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, only that would be fantastic to archaeology, in my opinion. Indeed. Would help us a lot.
Okay, I've got a number of questions for you, but I think this is going to be, I'm going to do some shorter segments for this podcast, just so our listeners are aware. And I mean, the reason is I'm trying to be respectful of your time. It's very late in the evening for you. but I think this is fantastic. And to be honest, I'd rather have a slightly shorter episode, get to the meat of what we're trying to do here. And then, you know, as you, I mean, I would love to follow this, to be honest. And as you go through your PhD research, have you, you know, come back on and say, hey, we found this out, or, you know, you decided to do this. And it would just be really interesting to follow this journey. So let's take a break. And then on the other side, I've got some other questions about robots. Back in a minute.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to episode 177 of the Archaeotech Podcast. And as I mentioned, it's just me today. Paul is out strolling around in Iraq looking for fun and interesting archaeology. So again, we'll talk to him when he gets back about that. But we're here with Daniel talking about robotics and archaeology. And you mentioned in the last segment, Daniel, I mean, you had a hard time, which I totally understand, like just defining what archaeology means. So you can say, I want a robot to do archaeology. And man, we talk about that on the Archaeology Podcast Network and the CRM podcast all the time. Like what does archaeology actually mean? You know what I mean? Is it research? Is it digging? Is it walking around on the ground and looking at stuff? Is it writing reports? I mean, what is, that's a hard definition, but I was also wondering while you were saying that, how do you define robot? Right? Like, because a robot could conceivably just be an intelligent computer program that does things for you. What about drones? Are drones running on an automatic program that you set up for them? Or maybe even one that says, hey, I want this area surveyed. You figure out how to do it. Is that also a robot? Like in your, well, first I want to hear you define robot in for the purposes of your thesis, but then maybe also define robot for what you're trying to achieve. Because some people might be imagining, you know, a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica or something like that, you know, arms and legs and you know, just using a shovel to dig a hole. So how did you define robot for this study, and how are you defining robot for exactly what you're looking for?
Okay, this is another complex question, because roboticists probably have this problem too.
Yeah, probably.
The meaning of robot is not a pleasant one. It came from Ruhr, a marvelous piece of literary work, and it means labor force, work, forced work. So it's difficult to say what is a robot today, because many robots today lack a physical form, and that was like a major definition in classical robotics, that robotics is something that we can induce a kind of function.
Right.
But that something was material. But now we are on an entirely new dimension, we have robots that do not exist in our present life as objects. We have artificial intelligence, we have drones that are a kind of hybrid, because drones, and I'm glad you asked that, drones are the main robot that we view today, and they are a hybrid. They have a physical body, but they have a brain, a set of algorithms that we can program to do certain functions. They fly, they take photos, but they can identify objects too, so they have computer vision. So I think the most useful definition that we can have of a robot concerning humanities and archaeology is a machine that can function with a set of instructions. That set of instructions being made by a human or mediated by a human, because robots today can interact with other robots and program another robot. And we see that all the time on the internet, the bots, pop-ups, the unfortunately the spam. So it's a difficult world. But I think the most useful definition it's that what I gave you.
So on to the second half of that question then. How, in the context of archaeology and your dissertation, what kind of robot are you thinking you want to, I don't know if develop is the right word, but at least theorize for archaeology in the context of the work you're doing now?
So in the first year, I thought that a simple robot, and by that I mean like a mannequin. I'm building a robot named Talos of the Greek legend. He's not going to destroy anything, I hope, but he is intended to be a humanoid robot, a robot about human height with human similarities, and it exists on the physical world. That was my first, and it is still my first objective. But then I had a problem, because how could it analyze text?
Sure.
Being only a physical form. Sure, I could put some components that enable him to do that. But the solution that I encountered was, why make a robot to do all the functions when you can make smaller robots that do a function each one of them? So I'm building Talos, but I'm building extensions of Talos as well. So I'm building drones, I'm building little cameras that I'm calling them the eyes, because they see like us, and they are connected to a microcontroller that is like a tiny brain that has a set of algorithms that say, hey, this is a prehistoric artifact. And I say to them, good. And this is a Roman artifact. Yeah, okay. So I'm building smaller robots and fusing them together with the main body. Okay. And that surprised me at first, but then I thought, okay, this is not very very different from us. We are archaeologists, but we have a lot of tasks to do, digging, analyzing, producing reports, theorizing. So why not build something that could do everything, but at smaller scale? And that's how I'm doing my PhD, building a little brick of the wall at the time.
Well, that sounds really cool and pretty interesting. I mean, when you were saying, well, first off, I feel like every roboticist in a fictional or science fiction circumstance that says, you know, I hope it doesn't destroy the world. But sure. The next thing, you know, we have Skynet and Terminator. So so anyway, this is interesting because I mean, there's so many different, I guess, tasks. And when you were talking about, you know, processors and having a more human, full-sized robot as your first thought of doing this, obviously some of the problems that you run into are some of the things that you mentioned, right? Like the computing power required for something like that to become a human. While we're getting closer and closer to having something like that on board, the power requirements and all that stuff is just so high, right? In order to, you know, get something to like that to function, say out in the field or something, in a good way. But I'm just kind of wondering from a theoretical standpoint, man, with cellular technology being almost everywhere, and, you know, even satellite technology getting a lot better. We just got Starlink satellite for our RV. My wife and I live in a recreational vehicle and travel around the country, and we got Starlink satellite, and the dish for that is actually pretty small, a lot smaller than I expected it to be. And I imagine that technology is just going to be getting smaller and smaller. And with those kind of speeds, are you thinking about the robot's computing power and its functional and analytical power all being on board, or are you offloading some of that to the internet? Basically doing some offline processing or using, you know, banks of servers somewhere else, but the internet or cellular networks to communicate with those servers. I'm just wondering if it all has to be on board, or is there a local server that these things would communicate with, or something remote that they would communicate with?
Okay. Both. I think that the main robot, it exists for that function, but another very important function that is human interaction and human mm-hmm. communication. That's why he is a humanoid. But with right. the power that we have today, and the complex task here is not to build something that is capable of analyzing, because that is almost trivial today. Mm-hmm. The problem here is to make something that is a true tool and that brings more benefit to archaeologists,
okay.
but in all fields of archaeology. It's mm-hmm. very difficult to build a robot that functions on a lab and on the field work at mm-hmm. the same time, because that involves motion, it involves protection from weather, it right. involves something as simple as solar energy. You mm-hmm. can't have simply a plug on the middle of the field. The problem here is to make something that is so vast and hybrid as the past itself. And that is a humongous task, and I think it's very difficult to grasp even that. So I'm building what we are, or what I think that we are more capable now. But one thing that we may work towards is virtual reality allied to all this. I think it will have a major impact on archaeology, and I really, really want to explore that dimension too with right. my robot. I think we can make awesome simulations of the past, and even simulating fieldwork and probabilities and hypotheses. It's amazing. The world we live now, it's full of opportunities in terms of technology, yeah. and archaeology can't, we need to use it to our benefit. We can't just close our eyes and think that the past is inaccessible. We have a lot of tools today.
Right. Well, you're speaking to the right audience regarding that for sure. At least me anyway. And I know Paul would love to be in this discussion too. That's why we need to have you back on, because I have a feeling he would have a lot of questions for you regarding some of the more technical aspects of this. But I've got a few more things to say about this for sure, and some high level questions to ask you moving forward. And we'll do that on the other side of the break in segment three. Back in a minute.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the ArchaeoTech Podcast, our final segment, and we are talking about robotics and archaeology. And Daniel, a couple of things that you said last segment really had me thinking here, but I got to backtrack and make sure that we cover everything. So we've talked about a number of things, you know, regarding the, you know, I guess shape and size and capabilities of certain robots, but what specific tasks do you see early robots in this field actually doing, right? You know, I'm thinking we have everything from, like you mentioned, lab work. So there's analytical things that can be done in lab work. There's just straight up digging and surveying and all kinds of things we do in the field. Like, what specific tasks do you see the first ones that a robot could possibly take over?
Okay, the first ones, and I think that it's being made today, it's artifact identification.
For sure.
On the lab. That's the main thing that it's being produced today. What I wanted to see more is structures on the field. I would like to see more drones utilizing computer vision. Mm-hmm. So when I have a drone surveying a site, I would like it to make assumptions of how the terrain behaves, of what kind of chronological periods may be there, and mm-hmm. what kind of structures he can be seeing from a different view of ours. I think that I really wanted to see more of that, because that is not that hard. Everyone or almost everyone has a drone today. And they are really, really cheap, and they are going to be even cheaper as time go on. And to build the components that bring life to a drone in terms of computer vision is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be much cheaper than LiDAR, for example.
Oh yeah.
And may it doesn't produce the same results, but we can make a lot of data with that.
Just on drones real quick, it would be really cool, because I mean, I've programmed drones, and I think Paul's doing that right now in Iraq, but I've programmed drones to say, you know, look at a certain, you know, area, and then run this path across this area, and then it just comes back. But all it's doing is taking pictures. It would be super cool if it could identify something while it's doing that and mark it as a target that it wants to go back to, or stop in the process and say, you know what, I think I'm going to slow down and take some better pictures of this thing and analyze it a little better, and maybe even process the photogrammetric, you know, structure that it could build, like, on board, and then make some assumptions, like you said, about, you know, hey, I think we might have something here, and I took a little extra data about it, so let's see what we think. But that seems like we're so close to that, doesn't it?
We are already there.
Yeah.
We just need to teach it. That's the main thing. We have we have all that we need in our hands. Mm-hmm. The time that we need to learn these things is not a lot. Almost any archaeologist today knows about photogrammetry. Even mm-hmm. if somebody can't transform some data into photogrammetry, we can understand it. And with drones, it's even simpler. It's just thinking about this question: how mm-hmm. can I tell to someone being a drone in this case,
right,
to identify a certain thing? This is a task that archaeologists do all the time, and we need to communicate that not only to humans but to robots and to right. tools like drones, so they can help us build more complex theories about the past. I think right. that is the most useful thing that we can do regards technology in archaeology. It's to teach it to help us make better assumptions about the past and archaeology.
Okay, I've got a question about that I'll save towards the end, but I want to step back one more time to something else you said in segment two, because I couldn't let this go. You mentioned talking about virtual reality and how, you know, we need to incorporate more virtual reality. And you did say some things that I have thought about before as well, and I know others as well too, using virtual reality to not only like train and being able to see and interact with data and sites and you know, things in a different way that's non-destructive, because it is virtual reality, and if we can replicate it there, then we can do things that we wouldn't be able to do in real life. But what about like a virtual reality? I mean, maybe I've seen The Matrix too many times, but like a virtual reality control of the field robots. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of seeing through their eyes, but their eyes are building a world around you, and you're wearing a headset, and you're sitting in the comforts of your safe, comfortable office where you don't have the dangers sometimes of weather and being in the field and other things that can happen. I've mentioned it on this podcast before. I worked on a Navy base in California where there were unexploded ordnance and bombs and missiles all over the place and rattlesnakes and all kinds of things. And, you know, I mean, we want to do the archaeology, but we want to be safe while we're doing it. So this is a really good way to do that. But is there talk in this field about using virtual or augmented reality to actually control? And I don't know if they'd even be robots at that point, because if you're driving them, then they're just vehicles, right? But
yeah,
it's some sort of combination.
Absolutely. We don't need virtual reality to do that. We can do it without it, but I think it's best to build an entire environment mm-hmm. to archaeologist context, it's basilar to what to everything that we do. So I think to have something that can build an environment at the same time that is excavating, digging, recording, it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
If it is still a robot, I think yes, because we need to think about this as, again, an hybrid, because it's not an autonomous vehicle. It can be in some tasks, but we don't want to erase the human factor here. On the contrary, we want to emphasize it. So to have, for example, in subaquatic archaeology, an autonomous vehicle that can dive to a certain depth, and then mm-hmm. we enter on what the robot is doing, and we can manipulate it and receive data from him. We are at that moment now. We have the technology to do it. Like right. a famous right. film says, we have the technology to make all of these things happen. I think we just need a little more capacity on our side to understand that technology is not a menace to archaeology in terms of it destroying jobs, for example, or reducing archaeologists to mere observers of robots. I think the other way around. I think technology can elevate us, truly. And I think if we can automate some of the tasks that we do, we can bring so much more to the table in scientific terms and discoveries and theories by working with robots and technology in general. So yeah, virtual reality can be used that way, can be used in countless other ways. We can dig the same site hundreds of times. And yeah, that for me is really, really interesting, how we can make different theories about the same site, about the same data that is never destroyed. That kind of experience needs to be made more often, I think.
Yeah, I think something that made me think of was, you know, when we're often doing an excavation, the only photographs we will often take in normal practice is maybe the first photograph of a level before we start digging it in, say, a 1 meter by 1 meter square or something. And then we'll take a photograph of the last when we get down 10 centimeters or whatever that is. And we might take a photograph of a profile or a picture if we find that. But if we were able to have, you know, something recording everything as we go down, and if a robot were doing this excavation, it would be able to, you know, record as it's doing this sort of thing, everything that's happening, then we could bring that into something like virtual reality, and we could kind of replay the excavation from either a training standpoint, you know, having students replay the excavation so we know exactly where everything is and they can just excavate virtually, and or even from a standpoint of maybe we missed something the first time around. You know what I mean? That might be found later on. Maybe we should have excavated something in one way, but we did it in another way, and we just missed something. So I think that's really cool. And you alluded to something that I was going to bring up as one of my last questions, but I kind of want to talk about a little more. What do you actually say to people, especially archaeologists, that say robots are going to take our jobs? Because I personally understand that they would be an augmentation to what we're doing. They would free us up to do the more analytical, the more scientific tasks, and kind of take a little bit of the mundane work away from it, which is admittedly some people just like that kind of work. But as scientists, I feel like it would allow us to be better scientists. But what kind of arguments do you make for people that say, you know, hey, you're just taking our jobs and giving them to robots?
The first argument is simple, and it's a very crude one. Financially, it's not viable to substitute archaeologists for robots. The cost of a robot is too high for a human. In other areas, we are seeing that humans are being replaced, but that is specific to the conditions and to the functions that are being augmented and being made better. For example, in warehouses, we don't need humans anymore because we have little robots that go to precise places that don't sleep, that do not need to rebel for better work conditions. And some jobs are disappearing and some jobs have already disappeared. But that depends greatly on what the jobs do and what the jobs produce. We archaeologists produce a kind of knowledge that financially is not very appealing to big corporations, big data, big governmental issues. In terms of finance, I say it again, not in terms of heritage, because what we do is of paramount importance in my view, in heritage, in memory, in engaging mm-hmm. with the communities about their identity, their past. But financially, it's not that great of a deal. The second argument that I always make is that this is not a debate of replacement. This is a debate to make better tools. The microscope did not replace any scientist. It only opened the door to more science. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to fear scientific developments on technology that goes even further, helping science. I think it's a paradox. Why should we fear that kind of technology if we can do better science and understand better the world we live in? I don't think it makes sense. But I do understand the fear. I don't want to replace archaeologists.
Yeah.
I truly want to help them to be a better version of what we are now. I think the way can only be that. I want the robots that I make to be tools and to help everyone that needs it. And you asked me on the other segment, I want these robots or these databases to be accessible for everyone. Maybe right. The physical robots won't be because they are prototypes, and but the databases must be free to everyone.
Sure.
Because it doesn't make sense to build something, in my view, that helps discovery if common archaeologists can't use it. We can't simply make it so a tool that only certain people can utilize. We need to make it open for everyone so that everyone can share their opinion and engage with the research of everyone else. I think of it as a connected world, a truly connected world, and robots can help us build it.
Well said. I've been thinking about some of this stuff for a while now, and that is right in line. And I think you've got it spot on how the microscope didn't replace the scientists, it just made better scientists. I think with archaeological data, there's constant conversations about how we have so much data that's already been collected, right? So while we have to go out and do field projects, I'm a CRM archaeologist in the United States, of course, and while we have to go out and do field projects because there's development and there's things that is prompting these digs, it's just adding to this data set that we already haven't fully and adequately analyzed. So if we can either use robots to either A, do the field work and collect the data while we're doing more analysis and really doing the theorizing and the writing of reports and things like that, or, you know, at the same time, having more analysis that's able to be done on these archive collections that we have that really haven't been thoroughly studied, either way, the assistance would be useful. Having assistance in that area from a tireless, you know, workforce that is hyper intelligent and can do things and can do it without, you know, questioning or complaint would be phenomenal to aid in the science and to just better what we can do and increase what we can do. So 100% on board with this. Well, Daniel, thanks for coming on. And I hope that we can certainly talk to you as your research develops and, you know, new things come out and you want to come back on the show and talk about them. Hey, if there's something you read, you go to a conference about new developments in robotics and AI and stuff that you can think and have help archaeology, send us an email and come on the show and let's talk about it. We love just having the conversation about these kind of things. And I think our audiences like it as well.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, with that, thank you, Daniel. And we will be back next time, hopefully with Paul this time, if he's recovered from his 5 weeks in Iraq. We'll see. All right. Thanks a lot. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to the ArchaeoTech Podcast. Links to items mentioned on the show are in the show notes at www.archpodnet.com/ArchaeoTech. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com and paul@lugal.com. Support the show by becoming a member at archpodnet.com/members. The music is a song called Off Road and is license free from Apple. Thanks for listening.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
.com.